Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon, and we're going to have an amazing podcast today. Today we have John Wheeler here. He's the dynamic, visionary CEO of Alpha Aesthetics Partners, and this is a company kind of at the forefront of aesthetics and doing really innovative things in our industry. I think he is so interesting. He has a background including a bachelor's in theology, a master's in divinity, and 7 years serving as a pastor.
Yeah, I mastered divinity. If there's anything you want to know.
And now you've come to the dark side of aesthetics.
You know, you got to play both sides.
The beautiful side of aesthetics, actually. Maybe we'll start with just like rapid fire questions just to get to know John Wheeler, the
sure.
individual better.
Yeah.
Okay. Coffee or tea?
Definitely cold brew coffee.
Cold brew coffee. All right. Yoga or CrossFit?
Definitely CrossFit.
There's a lot of definites in there.
Yes. Sorry. I don't play in the gray. I'm very extreme.
Morning person or late night owl?
So that's actually a little bit of a nuanced question. I would say there's this whole philosophy around chronotypes. Have you seen this? What's your chronotype?
Yeah, actually.
So there's larks, which are morning people, then there's night owls, and then there's this other chronotype, which is kind of a little bit in the middle. Like, I'm not the guy that gets up at 5 a.m. or 4 a.m., but I'm definitely the guy that gets up at, you know, 6:30, 6:45 and likes to get a start in the day.
Got it. So productive.
Yeah, like to be asleep at 10:15, 10:30, and, you know, get up somewhat early, but not 4:30, 5 a.m.
What's your favorite app on your phone that you just go to?
Man, definitely Twitter. Definitely Apple News. I don't know, Becca. What would you say?
No asking for help.
I'm addicted to Twitter and Apple News. I live, and then obviously my email. I live in my email. And Twitter and Apple News,
amazing.
Which now obviously is X, but the app formerly known as Twitter.
Exactly.
Yeah. Can I ask you some of these same questions?
Okay, let's mix it up.
Okay, coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Okay, any specific type?
I love it with, I put my collagen powder in it, and I'm an espresso fan.
Is that like a take on bulletproof espresso? Like,
because the collagen powder makes it really creamy. It's like 12 grams of protein, 12 grams of collagen peptides. It kind of tanks you for the day.
Is this your own personal brand of collagen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called Internal Radiance.
Okay. It radiates your internals.
It does. I intermittent fast, and I was finding that to be like too harsh and a little making me edgy in the mornings.
What's your window?
Usually I don't eat from like 8 p.m. till probably 1 p.m.
Okay. So 7-hour eating window.
Yeah, too.
But you'll do coffee.
I'll do the coffee.
Okay.
But that's got a little protein, so it's not a true intermittent fast.
Nice.
But I'm a believer in the biohacking and letting let your cells rest, let your metabolism recover.
Do you supplement that intermittent fasting with semaglutides?
I have done semaglutide in the past. I did Wegovy, which was one of those weight loss shots.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm very vocal about, and I'm so like excited that we brought that to our audience on Beauty Bites like a year before it was trending with Dr. Danielle Bellardo, who's a cardiologist and weight loss expert, which is actually a cardiologist, but she's gone through all the studies on our podcast and like just shown such a great health benefit.
Yeah.
It's not just a weight loss and fat reduction, although I was happy to shed the last 15 pounds of 4 pregnancies.
A lot of people don't realize this, and I'm not a doctor. I have only mastered divinity, not medicine. But it was invented as an anti-inflammatory.
Mm.
And so the inflammation benefits are amazing. I take a low dose of semaglutide. I don't have a ton of weight to lose, but I really like the anti-inflammatory.
Every week?
Every Sunday.
Oh, okay.
So in insulin units, I take 20 insulin units. And I'm not a doctor. I'm not recommending that. That's just what I do. It works for me. Suppresses my appetite.
Yeah.
I eat probably, you know, 2/3 of what I would normally eat. But then one of my favorite benefits that I found from it is, like, I enjoy beer. I'm not a big, like, I'm not a huge wine guy. I'm not a huge whiskey guy. And I, you know, drink beer from time to time. The weirdest thing, though, is I do not crave alcohol at all. Did you find
Same.
That? Zero.
Same.
Like, I could... Like, I probably was, like, had a little bit of a belly, not because I drink a whole lot, but maybe a few times a week.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, but...
It just doesn't have its enticements.
Zero. It's like, just somebody can, like, do you want this best IPA in the world? I'm like, I'll have a sip.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it's weird.
Actually, some of which I've kind of done that in terms of appetite in general. Like, I look at food very clinically. Monday to Friday, at least, I'm very, good about my diet. And because you're not hungry and you fill up so fast, I was really choosing the best food choices. So I'd go for high protein, then really great veggies, and then, like, okay, bread at the end. And by then, I'm too full anyhow.
Exactly. That is, people wonder, like, why does this peptide work? And that is why. It's not this magic drug.
No.
It does. It just takes the edge off, and then you can make good choices because you're not making these choices out of, I have to, like, I need sugar right now, or
it's
I need bread.
Like food drama, food. Like,
correct.
Obsession with what's your next meal, what's the
yes.
thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I was reading a study.
You walk into the lunchroom here, and there's so many treats in there, and I'm just like, I can just be above it and not really need to dive in.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What I was reading yesterday, there was a study that just came out, actually, about the alcohol with semaglutides, and they're thinking it links to sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the same how it cuts your appetite or your cravings for sugar.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same, like, alcohol kind of sugar.
Pathways.
Anyway, I just thought it was interesting.
Very
again, I'm not a doctor. I just geek out on this. But I'm a big bro science guy.
Like, what is a bro science guy?
Well, it'd be obviously semaglutides and then sermorelin or any HGH type of peptide.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things that I love that combination.
Yeah, I've talked to John at meetings before, and he's told me that peptides are the next wave of the future. And I actually truly do think that we really don't understand what peptides do in our body and the power of them. We're just starting to understand that. Like, there's certain ones that are out there that are prescribed. HGH I'm a little scared of because of the potential for cancer stimulation.
I've seen that with the HGH. Some people concerned about that. And then also some of these peptides that stimulate, the skin. Like, there's actually, I don't know if you've seen this, there's peptides that stimulate the melanocytes
mm-hmm.
in your skin to make you tan.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there's some concern around, do we want to wake up the melanocytes? Can that obviously lead to cancer as well? So it's still in the early innings of a lot of this, but I think it's pretty exciting, as far as the new frontier of medicine.
It's now becoming highly regulated, which is probably a good thing, but...
The FDA, like 6 weeks ago, came out and actually banned a lot of peptides. One of them was BPC-157,
mm-hmm.
which is this, it's purported to be a soft tissue growth. Like, it promotes blood flow to the soft tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So I took it every day when I tore my Achilles in May.
Mm.
And so anyway, kind of interesting developments.
Helped you
to
heal pretty quick.
I believe it did. That's anecdotal with an N of one.
Mm-hmm.
But I also had, just through Alpha, some orthopedic surgeons in my life that watched my journey with
mm-hmm.
that. And like Aaron Rodgers, I don't know that he's been on BPC, but
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised. He's healed faster from his Achilles. I don't know if you saw today, actually. He was just cleared to start practicing with the Jets.
Yeah, that's
like 8 weeks post Achilles tear. So anyway,
I'm very confident that athletes and sports teams are doing so much biohacking behind the scenes. Like, they all do cold plunges, they all do heat and sauna, they definitely do IV hydration. I'm positive they're doing M-Sculpt to build their muscle mass. Like, there's so many things now that we can do to make these $6 million bodies.
100%.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more. I forgot to keep asking you those questions, though. What was the third question that you asked me?
We asked about exercise, yoga, or CrossFit.
Yeah, yoga or CrossFit.
Neither. I don't mind a good yoga class, but lately I multitask and just walk on the treadmill and kind of get my emails out of the way while walking.
So you have a treadmill desk?
Yes, and then
tell
I'll
me
do
about
some
that.
Sprinting as well.
While sending emails?
Well, like, once I get sick of the emails, I'm like, I can't focus on this. I'm doing it on my phone, so that's bad for my eyes, clearly.
Yeah.
So then my eyes will get tired, and I'll be like, I'm just going to run for a while. So,
okay,
but
hold
I can
on.
I
want specifics.
Yeah. No, it's like a regular treadmill, but it has a huge, area where you have a screen that if I want to, I can be outdoors in the fitness. And
what brand?
Nordic Track.
Okay, so it's a standard. It is a standard treadmill. It's not a treadmill desk. Okay,
no,
got it.
Standard. But I walk on it at an incline, and then I manage to do like 100 emails, and I feel productive because I'm like done with my emails and I did my exercise.
Yeah, there's nothing better. Most of my life is Zoom meetings, And
that's depressing when you say that.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's truly usually, I don't know, 8 to 22 Zoom meetings in a day, depending on the day. And there's nothing better than a Zoom meeting while you're walking.
That's true.
Like, if you have to be in a Zoom meeting, it can be nice to just throw on some headphones. It's just something about moving while you're meeting that makes it way better. Mm-hmm. And your brain actually fires. I don't know if you find that if you're, like, ever meeting while you're walking your treadmill.
I
feel like your brain works better.
I think I have. And I even in the office, when I sit, I can't get any work done. When I'm standing, for some reason, I'm a super productive woman. And I don't know. That's just
I have a theory that you're always a productive woman. I've seen your to-do list, and I'm like, nice.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah, it is crazy.
Now, do you have a little ADHD?
You know, I don't say that.
I think it's a good thing, by the way.
Yeah, I have very low patience. So I'm really big on this personality survey. It's a professional tool. It's called Culture Index. And basically, it rates you in four really important areas against the population. And in the realm of patience, like how quickly I like to get things done and how quickly I need things done, I am in the top, or I guess the bottom 0.001% of humanity against the population. That, like, I need things done yesterday all the time, and I will get things done very quickly. So I don't know if that's ADHD. But it's like, if you...
I feel like I have that, too. And
it's
I have
just,
unrealistic
yeah.
time expectations, too. Like, I think I can do about 85 things more than real-life speed.
So that's a superpower in a lot of ways, right? Not everybody needs to have that. But, yeah, that's a lot of times a trait of a successful entrepreneur, which you are. There's other careers, though, where that's not a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. So you and I have this need to always be juggling things, and we like to multitask. Like, we get really bored really quickly. But for instance, some of the best financial operators in the nation, or most financial, you know, people in the country, accountants, whatever, they're on the opposite end of the spectrum of that.
So your philosophy is kind of deeply rooted in balancing innovation, customer service, marketing. How to fill your chair.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how we started our first med spa, was creating a raving fan experience, great marketing, great training, great culture, and was able to grow that into a few locations, and now I get to do what I do today.
Awesome. So you started with one location. What in the world made you come into aesthetics in the first place?
To be honest, so I was a pastor, and then I was a wedding DJ. And that's how I paid for seminary, was by being a wedding DJ.
Nice.
And after seminary, I just fell in love with business while I was doing my wedding business, sold that, moved home. And my father-in-law is a facial plastic surgeon. I don't know if you realize that.
I did not.
So he was leaving the hospital where he was doing ENT and facial plastics, wanted to just niche down on facial plastics. And he basically came to me and said, "Hey, I saw what you do with the wedding company. And how you built that, will you help me market this new med spa and facial plastic surgery company that I'm starting in El Dorado Hills?" And that's where it all started.
Beautiful. And then from there, one office turned into how many offices?
Well, Aesthetic Center today has three, adding additional locations today as well. And then about 7 months ago, we started Alpha Aesthetics Partners. And today we have 11 locations, 5 partners all throughout the United States, and, you know, adding more every month. So pretty fun.
So what is the vision that you have to grow? Are you just seeing that aesthetics is exploding, and that's why we're needing more locations, better providers everywhere around?
Yeah. You know, the industry has changed. I don't know how much of your audience cares about the industry versus treatments, but I'm happy to talk about the industry. I know that our audience on my podcast, we talk a lot about mergers and acquisitions, so they might be sick of this, but there's been a seismic shift in the industry, a paradigm shift in the industry, in that the investment community has taken note of what we're doing in aesthetics. They've developed theses. That sounds like a weird word, right? Is that a word?
Theses?
Is that the plural of thesis?
The correct English word, yes.
Emphasis on the TH at the beginning. They've developed theses on our industry, and they've just really appreciated the cash nature of aesthetics, right? Especially in this hyperinflationary type of environment.
Yeah.
We have a lot more controls over how much we charge versus like a hospital where they're basically price takers, not price makers. Mm-hmm. They found aesthetics to be durable through recessions. They found that it's recurring with treatments like neurotoxins and fillers being treatments that you need every few months. Mm-hmm. And so the investment community through de novo efforts, which would be like Laser Away, Skin Spirit, Ideal Image, you know, all of these big box type brands, in addition to now mergers and acquisitions, which is primarily what Alpha is, they're putting some pretty serious money and innovation into our industry. And being somebody that's been here for a while now, I wanted to be a part of doing it the right way, mm-hmm. and not just have outsiders come in and try to put their thumbprint on our industry. Yeah. And so that's why we started Alpha, was to create this super group of partners that are doing it the right way, with clinical and cultural autonomy, but also with operational and financial best practices.
I personally have been approached by 3 or 4 different private equity groups. How do we know we're dealing with a good, reputable intentions in these companies?
You know, I think it really starts with the private equity backer. So anybody that's doing what I'm doing, they're typically backed by private equity. You know, what's funny though is I talk to some people, I get to talk with a lot of people, you know, every week all the time about what Alpha is and joining Alpha. It's super fun. A lot of people are like, you know what, I was actually just approached, I've been potentially working with these people that just graduated from this business school and they're trying to do the same thing.
Yes.
And I'm just like, look, I think Alpha's awesome. I think what we're building is best in class. There's other groups that are doing something similar to what we're doing that are also backed by private equity firms. That though, to me, like, what we do is so hard. If I came to you and I was like, hey, Dr. K, you know, I watched a couple YouTube videos, I think I'm ready to do a deep plane facelift. And you'd be like,
that happens all the time in my DMs, actually.
you would be like, no, John, you're not. Like, what I do is really difficult, and it takes a lot of skill and experience to do this. And it's the same with basically combining practices into one, into a nationwide platform. Mm-hmm. That's super difficult, right? You have to manage integrations, you have to manage operations, finances, and then not to mention the cap table and all of these things. How much debt are you using when you're acquiring new partners, right? All of this goes into what we do, and it is, part of it's an art, but a lot of it's a science. Yeah. And so I think it starts with, what's the track record of the private equity backer? Have they been successful? How involved are they in the early stages of the platform to really set it up for success? And then the other piece is, what's the track record of the founders and of the executives and the leadership team? And
yeah.
Do you like them, right? All of these things play
into
it.
A marriage, basically.
Honestly, it is more difficult to enter into, and it is more difficult to exit out of a partnership than a marriage.
Yeah. You really have to do your due diligence and look at all the financials. And I think you have to analyze your own life as well to know if you're ready for that transition or not. If you're in your
100%.
Growth phase, if you're in your stability phase, if you're in your I'm ready to scale phase.
Yeah, I would say, and again, I don't know how deep you want to go in this, but you know, I love talking about this. I know we're also going to talk about AI, things like that, but partnering is not for everybody. And that's something I like to tell people. You know, I meet people like, you know what, I don't want to grow. I'm happy doing exactly what I'm doing, and I'm kind of in the twilight of my career.
Yeah.
And I came from the ER. Now I'm in aesthetics. I just want to do what I do. And it's
yeah.
like, then you
that's
probably shouldn't.
Legit.
Yeah. It's like, hey, respect for that. That's okay. Not everybody has to want to, you know, be a world beater and build a regional empire. It's totally fine. Mm-hmm. Do that. It's great. For us, we're just hyper-focused on partnering with people that are like, no, I want to build the biggest med spa in my region, right? Whether that's my city, whether that's, you know, my corner of the U.S., and I need some capital to do that. I want to be a part of a group with other people doing that, where we all have this common ownership, and, you know, we're all trying to take over the world. Like, that's what I want to do. And then there's half of the population that they just want to be in a dark room with their routine. Let me look at my numbers and my spreadsheets, and I can do the same thing every day, all day. In fact, I prefer that, just doing one task all day, every day, instead of juggling 1,000 different plates in the air, which mm-hmm. it sounds like you are of the same ilk, right?
I think you have to have like a little bit of drive and passion. Like, there was a quote from Robert F. Kennedy, which I read in college, and I used it in college applications, and I don't want to just drive home with the 5 o'clock light, sunlight in my eyes as the sun is setting every day. And is that my life and is that my day? Like, that's all there is. You go to work, you drive home at 5 o'clock, and the, you know, with the light of the sun setting, you have to have a little more meaning.
100%. And I, again, to be fair, I think the meaning can look, you know, different for different people, but I share that. Like, I remember when I ran our one location med spa before we had multiple, I worked in an 8x8 office with no windows. And I worked, I still do, I worked very long hours. You know, it was like, you know, at that point in time, I worked more hours now, but in that little 8x8, it was 60, 65 plus hours a week in an 8x8 with no windows. And I longed for the day where, like, somebody would invite me, like a rep would invite me to lunch to break up my day, right? To break up kind of the monotony of those days. And now it's like doing what I do in mergers and acquisitions. There was a day 2 weeks ago where I had 4 meetings in 4 cities, 4 different cities in Southern California by 2 p.m.
Wow.
And then I flew from Burbank, JSX airline. It was awesome.
Nice.
Flew from Burbank to Oakland. Joe Montana sat next to me. It was awesome. And then I had to meet with our newest partner, Laser Center of Marin, meet with their whole team to integrate them and then do an all-team dinner that night for their whole team. And present about what Alpha is to their whole team and their leadership team, and then drive home. And it was just like one of those days where it's like,
collapse,
to go from 8x8, same thing every day, to this, I don't know that this is healthy, but it has been quite the shift.
Definitely. It's hard to find the balance. I think
yeah.
I'm like either way, way always super on, or else I'll just sit on the sofa and do nothing.
Mm.
I like both, but
that's crazy you say that. So I feel the same, like your weekends.
I just do nothing. I want to sit with the dog on the sofa and do nothing. Or in the garden.
I'm literally the same.
Yeah.
Like high energy during the week, and then weekends I'm like...
So an introvert. So introvert or extrovert?
I'm definitely an extrovert. Mm. But I do need to... I think I'm not tired from people on the weekends. I think I'm just tired.
Physically tired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like this morning, I got up at 3:30 in the morning. Caught a flight at 6 a.m. to get down here, and
wow.
You know, a lot of days are like that.
Exactly.
So, I mean, what would you, if you had to attribute your success in this industry, I mean, what you've built is so incredible. I mean, a massive Instagram following, highly successful doctor and surgeon and injector, all of these things. If you had to attribute your success to a trait, like one trait that you have, you feel like not everybody has.
Hmm.
What would that trait be?
I should ask my team. I like to teach. And I think that, you know, having a certain amount of knowledge base and intelligence and being articulate makes me a good communicator. And I think that I invite people into what we're doing in the office in a very non-threatening way where they feel comfortable to ask questions. So I just want to open the door to what we do in aesthetics and show people. I want to democratize beauty for everyone. So I think being a teacher has been it's been powerful for me. And I taught through every aspect of my life, like teaching my own kids, teaching residents and surgery training programs, teaching nurses who come and train with me, and then realizing from Instagram so many questions were coming in all around the world about how do I inject this, how do I do that, how do I do your technique. So I started my own course and teaching with that too. So I teach patients, I teach injectors, I like to give.
Knowing you though, part of teaching for you is you're also a sponge for knowledge, so that you can give it away through that teaching, right?
Yeah, I think we both are. Like, you come into an industry you don't even know, and then you absorb, you understand the vibe and functioning and all the machinery that has to happen, and then in your brain you can see and implement a plan of how you can create the success.
Definitely, yeah. But I think that what's been impressive to me with our friendship is there's a lot of KOLs that are almost like empty vessels. Like, they're just really good speakers. They're really good on stage.
Yeah.
And then you ask them, you know, how many nanometers is a CO2 laser? Or, you know, what's the rheology around these different dermal fillers that makes them different from one another? It's like, I don't know, but I'm good at speaking.
Yeah.
And you're somebody who has a major presence in the industry, knows a lot about the industry and the players, but then also the science of what we do, how it works, but then also stuff that maybe isn't right down the fairway of a lot of doctors, which would be marketing and science and technology and AI and,
yeah,
you know, all of these kind of nerdy things that I think we both geek out on, right? Which a lot of people don't, mm-hmm, especially on the MD side, mm-hmm, you know?
It's easy, like you said, to be that person in the dark room that's just like, leave me alone. I don't know what I know. Don't bother me. But it's, I think it's exciting, and I do get bored easily, and I want to learn everything. And I also feel like we are growing this industry from scratch. It's 20 years. We're in the first 20 years of aesthetics. Imagine the first 20 years of sending a man to the moon. This is the beginning of aesthetics. So if we don't craft this industry correctly and we base it all on a lot of sales and advertising and garbage science, we're going to get garbage out, and we're going to have patients who don't trust us. And I really think it's important to be credible and reliable and, like, make people in industry stick to honest truth and science.
I couldn't agree more. And I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of hype in this industry. I think that social media spreads a lot of misinformation around expectations, and just people rely too much on hype and sex appeal and not enough on science.
Yeah.
You know, and laser physics and science around how each injectable works and why it works the way it does.
That's so interesting how a fad and a trend can just, like, take off. Like something like, I mean, a laser comes out every month, but something like Morpheus that had a really great marketing campaign, in spite of very limited science and very limited results, was able to launch on such a huge scale because it just became the, you know, fear of missing out. Like, I got to get a Morpheus. Everybody's doing it. And for the doctors, they were all buying them, and also for the patients. And then I felt very strongly about holding out for, like, real results. Not to dismorphous, but
yeah,
you know, I just feel like there's degrees of what we do.
I couldn't agree more, and I think the other sad thing about lasers, and I love lasers, I'm a laser nerd. Like, mm-hmm, I geek out hard on laser physics. But something I see in the industry is a lot of these companies have these amazing before and afters from a lot of, you know, MDs and PAs and NPs and RNs. I don't want to leave anybody out. But a lot of amazing KOLs that know those devices inside and out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they understand the physics, they understand everything about all of the settings, and they can deliver incredible results. And what a lot of the companies sell is, hey, if your team takes a 4-hour training and you buy this device, you'll be able to deliver these results.
Right.
And then we have all these people that take them at their word, buy the device, that they don't get any results because they don't understand the device and the science behind it. And it, to me, that's another just really sad part of the industry, is we have patients coming in and paying for that treatment, mm-hmm, getting no results, and it perpetuates this cycle of, this doesn't work, that doesn't work, and, you know,
yeah,
it's just,
you
a
have
bummer
to be so credible. I think when I go on my Instagram, I'm only putting things there when I believe in these results, and that makes me credible, because if a patient can't trust me, or they come in and do something and don't really see anything, that doesn't move the needle for them. They're going to lose their faith and confidence in me.
Yeah.
And the whole industry needs to realize that. And the things that we say, like, sometimes people, you know, there's this whole talk about biostimulators, and if you get one, you can never get a facelift again. These little remarks that people say on their social media can change the trajectory of an entire industry based on one person's noticed results or hearsay or observational studies with an N of, you know, I don't know what it is. They don't publish. They don't even publish. Like, if you have a study and you have something you want to report that you've clinically seen, so much science is discovered like that, but you have to write it up.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think the other thing that we have in common is, I think maybe we have this desire to be provocateurs.
Yes.
I've seen that on your social.
Yeah. I don't mind to ask the hard questions because, like, I'm at a good stage in life where I've worked really hard, and I don't need to be funded by industry. If I want to do a study, I'll just, like, offer the products cheap or free to my patients and then take the photos, do the hard work, map the results. So I think having that feeling of not, oh, I don't know anybody anything, and I'm just going to talk on behalf of what I think is cool and interesting and what I know my patients will love.
Have you gone on the record about your Chrissy Teigen story?
Oh, well, I have talked about it on a few podcasts.
You have?
I did, yeah. And that was a traumatic. I felt bad. Okay, for those of you who don't know, I did a, I think we did a TikTok with Chrissy Teigen, and she was in the background. She's beautiful.
Her image. Not her, right?
Not her. A picture of her, a repost of someone else's TikTok was in the background, and I was commenting on how injectors need to do better and not have so much reliance on hyaluronic gel fillers, because fillers can draw so much water content in and swell the face and give a puffy, doughy filler look.
Volumizing isn't always the option.
Right.
The best option.
And so the post was very much directed at, and the words were, injectors need to do better. And then my lovely interns and team tagged Chrissy Teigen in it, said unfortunately she took offense and saw her image affiliated with the words puppy filler face. So she came for me and posted me on her story, and her fans, lots of her fans sent me DMs and messages about how it was 50-50. 50% kind of don't love Chrissy Teigen, and
yeah.
50% said that she was just pregnant, and how could I say something like that, and it's mean of me to shame a person for doing anything or for their appearance.
Sure. So, but did that grow your audience substantially?
It's quite possible, because I think the next day I was in the Daily Mail and People Magazine and like all over the place, but, and you know, not with like glowing comments. It was Chrissy Teigen saying Dr. K's really mean for pointing out and criticizing her face and making her feel bad about herself.
Do you regret doing that, or are you glad in some ways that it happened? Like,
I
is all publicity good
publicity? I think it was definitely a learning experience for me.
Do you still do videos like that? Because that's a major part of our industry, is commenting on celebrity
work. I see surgeons doing that all
work.
The time, and always commenting about who's had work done, what have they had work done. I think, yes, we're entitled to give our opinions. And, you know, her critique was that she just had a baby, and like, okay, I'm sorry, but I've had four babies, and I kind of know what the turgor and water pressure of a normal face looks like versus when some product's in there. And I don't critique any woman for getting work done. It's your prerogative. But I was assessing the fact that in our industry, we use too much hyaluronic gel filler, and people get puffy from that. And it's not the fault of the patient. It's the injectors that have limited skills with limited products and sometimes don't recommend the right thing.
What do you think she should have used?
I mean, I think, first of all, don't do anything too soon when you're postpartum. That's the number one thing. Like, it takes 9 months to have a baby. You should wait 9 months to let your body equilibrate. Definitely at least 6 months. Because I think that the body fluids, facial fat, everything changes. So that would have been my first thing. And number two, I use a lot of collagen biostimulators. It gives a really natural, supported, refreshed look. And your body's going to create the collagen where it needs it.
So when you say collagen stimulators, are you talking like bovine collagen, Envelopil, are you talking Sculptra?
Sculptra or
okay.
Radiesse,
okay.
Hyperdilute Radiesse, microneedling with PRP. PRP is a great one.
Mm.
You know, it's your own autologous product.
Sure.
So I learned a lot from that experience, and I would probably definitely never tag a celebrity again in their postings. And I also think that it was really talking about over-reliance on gel fillers. So
yeah.
I think it was all publicity is good publicity.
See,
it made my name go around the world once, but the very next day everybody forgot already.
If I could throw my hat in the ring on your behalf, what I hate is this celebrity culture where everybody denies that they do anything.
Yeah.
And I think that is way more toxic than critiquing the work done on somebody as a plastic surgeon.
Yeah, I mean, I think that after 20 years of experience, I have a very keen eye, and I literally, when patients come in, we can tell what they've had done based on the telltale signs. And so there's nothing wrong in being able to point that out for other people. And everything wrong with people pretending they've done no work, and it makes everyone's self-esteem suffer when these actresses, and well, they look fabulous, but they put so much investment into it. It makes everyone else feel inferior and inadequate.
I couldn't agree more. It's like, no, I only use olive oil.
Exactly.
No, you don't.
J-Lo. Yeah, just I did honest. Critique her too, in all fairness.
You did?
A few years back when my account wasn't as big, we did critique J-Lo.
What did you think? What do you think she's had done?
Oh, well, a bit of everything, but you know, I don't want her fans to come for me. So,
just stay away from Taylor Swift.
I'm allow J-Lo to give her own commentary.
Stay away from Taylor Swift and Beyonce.
Taylor's aging great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I just think their fan base is vicious.
They're very dedicated. Yes. I was impressed with the passion. Like, people not only came after me on Instagram, but they went to my Yelp, they went to my Google reviews.
They left bad reviews?
Yes. Crazy, right? It took a long time to get all that fixed because, you know, these people never saw me as a patient. But
wow. That's
interesting,
crazy.
Right? So yeah. Anyway, there's lessons to be learned. And I think when you're a person who has a reputation, you have to be careful what you say. And say it in a way that doesn't offend anybody. But that makes for a very vanilla life. Like, I ought to be able to say what I want to say.
That's why you have, what's your following, 350,000?
Yeah, something like that.
That's why 350,000 people follow you. Because there is a perspective that is being shared on your channel that is not the norm, right? It's not vanilla.
Yeah.
It's Rocky Road.
Exactly.
And there's going to be, with Rocky Road, there's going to be some bumps along the way.
That's life.
That's why people follow you, though.
Yeah. I think that's another thing that makes you successful is the day you decide to just be yourself. And you don't have to be worried about image. You're just, like, putting out consistently, truly who you are. And you'll find your tribe. Like, you're not the right flavor for everybody. But some people who like the Rocky Road, they'll come.
The interesting thing is...
I don't even like Rocky Road. I like Mint Chip.
Okay. My daughter does, too. My 4-year-old daughter. It's her favorite. I mean, that's also vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
right? Intimacy. Intimacy is... You can think about it as into me you see, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you let people in and you say, I'm
Wait,
done.
That sounds like a sermon you've given.
Yeah, I haven't actually. But when you let people in, you just say, hey, this is the real me,
yeah.
right? No filters,
yeah.
not pretending. This is me.
Exactly.
The weird thing is we think that's going to drive people away, but it actually draws people in.
It really does.
Because what we're drawn to is authenticity. And when it comes to marketing, I'm sure you would vouch for this. The videos that do the best are the videos where it's like, hey, I'm on an iPhone. This is like the crappiest video anybody's ever seen. But it's just, I just had to show you guys something really quick. I thought this was super interesting. I wanted to share this.
Yeah.
So, and then somehow the worst performing videos are like, I hired a professional videographer. I spent $10,000 on this video. It's amazing. It's like nobody cares on Instagram.
That's so true.
They just want the real and the raw.
Well, I think that's one reason why artificial intelligence is not going to replace our marketing. You and I are both using artificial intelligence in the office in terms of helping with workflow, productivity, and everything. But there is no chance that it's going to replace the humans that work here.
No, I think about AI, you know, people are concerned about it replacing our jobs. To be honest with you, I am more concerned about AI destroying humanity than I am about it replacing our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I think about AI similar to like a tractor 100 years ago, and people said, hey, our tractor is going to replace farming. You know, they made farming a lot more productive. Instead of being able to harvest, you know, X, you were able to harvest X to the 10th power,
mm-hmm.
truly, with, you know, replacing, you know, horse-drawn instruments with tractors. It increased the yield, but it also allowed for a lot of people to leave farming and to do other endeavors like medicine or like, you know, finance or whatever outside of the farm. And I think that that's going to happen with AI too. It's just going to increase productivity to the point where there's not as many jobs around copy or around, you know, a lot of the things that we do on a daily basis, whether it's writing or financial or coding, a lot of these things. And I just think people are going to find other things to do. I don't
yeah.
think it's going to be like nobody has a job anymore.
I think you're right. But I do worry that it's going to dumb us down because literally the answers that you get out of AI are so fast and furious and really quite good that you almost don't have to think that much anymore. Like, I don't have to search for the right words to come up with the thing I want to say. I can kind of just feed a few prompts and generate like a really very decent list.
That's true. No, that's undeniably true. And I think you and I use AI more than most people I know Our marketing team uses it as well.
What are your favorite AI apps to use right now?
Well, I mean, honestly, ChatGPT.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love ChatGPT. I live in that app. And to respond to what you were saying, you know, I have my MDiv, like I mentioned. Most of an MDiv is writing papers.
Mm-hmm.
And so every class, every single class you take, there is your last paper of the semester, which is every class will require typically a 20 to say 40 page paper.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes those papers are as specific on what does this one word and this one verse mean in the Greek?
Hmm.
Like imagine writing 30 pages about one word,
wow.
Right? So writing is something I've just done in high volume. And what's crazy is after using ChatGPT extensively for, I'd say I've used it extensively for 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
Like I use it all day,
every day. Yeah.
Not all day, but a lot every day. I can barely write. It's crazy. Like
you
even
lose
writing
those
a prompt.
Skills quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even writing a prompt.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm just like, I can't write a paragraph prompt. It's crazy.
But the ChatGPT language is sometimes so cheeseball and archaic that I can easily pick it up. Like my assistant sometimes will hand me something to read and I'll be like, this is ChatGPT. Take this back and write it again.
Yeah.
Because you can tell that it's not, it just doesn't flow. It's not normal speech patterns. It's very, you know, it's kind of just cheesy.
This is where I think the two most common mistakes people make with ChatGPT. Number one, and actually I can thank you for this,
hmm.
is they don't upgrade to the pro version.
Yeah.
ChatGPT 3.5 is effing terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is awful.
It's clunky.
It is very clunky. I hate it. Like, when you pay the $20 a month and you unlock ChatGPT 4, ChatGPT 4 is quite literally, by the information they've fed it, I believe it's 2.5, if not 3.5x better,
mm-hmm.
as far as the language and the large language model that it consumes. But then also, like, it's just better at writing. It's way more creative. And the other thing, the second mistake I see people make, other than not upgrading to ChatGPT 4 and pretty much only using ChatGPT 4, is they are complacent to, and they're happy to use the first response. ChatGPT is never the best response. It is like the rough draft.
Yeah.
And when you start, and I know you do, but you know, a lot of people at home, when you start thinking about it like that, where, okay, this is now this piece of clay that it just spat out. Now I need to say, hey, great, less verbose or less, you know, flowery with
yeah.
the language, or make
refine
it shorter,
it. Mm-hmm.
refine it. I mean, you should be going through, from the first thing it spits out, you should be going through 3 to 8 different iterations of that copy
yes.
until it gives you something you're like, yeah, this is freaking perfect.
Yeah, you easily can. And also, I like to use prompts where I tell it, you are writing for an audience of professional physicians or nurses or injectors, so that it uses the language. It already goes into the, you know, language with the intent of speaking to that audience, to that style. So that's good. And then I love the idea of refining it, make this more professional. Okay, do it again and make it humorous, or however you want it to go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then what happens a lot is you'll say, make it humorous, like you just said, and it'll write something that's just way over the top.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa.
You
whoa.
Can literally say, that's not funny. Try
yeah.
again.
That's like too far. Dial it back a little bit. Something
yeah.
in between. And the memory that it has is amazing. So it's like somewhere in between the first example and this example.
It does pretty well. What worries me is that people will start using the video, the text to video, to create, like, I feel like we're going to reach the point where we see posts, videos, and images that are just generated by AI. And that are, like, you can generate them so fast and so furious that it will lose meaning to the consumer who's scrolling their Instagram. It'll just be like, too many emails, too many,
that
know,
will happen.
Too many videos.
Yeah, that will happen. A lot of the text to video stuff I've been seeing is crazy.
Yeah.
And the text to photo, like the Dolly feature in ChatGPT, I use that all the time. I use that for even mock-ups to take to our design team. Like, we're working on a project right now. I won't say too much about it, but we're creating the younger brother of Clippy.
Hmm.
I don't know if you remember Clippy,
no.
the assistant from Microsoft Office.
Oh, the little paperclip guy.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Clippy.
Yeah. I don't
yeah.
know.
So
younger brother.
We created him. We're creating him for just internal. Like, we just do stupid, funny stuff because,
mm-hmm.
like, the way that I build all of my companies. Like, Elon Musk is a hero of mine. I know that he's been in hot water. I don't condone all the things that he says. But you look at the way he builds his business. Like, I have a Tesla. It drives itself. Super cool, right? But it also farts. Mm-hmm. And it also plays Carol of the Bells using mm-hmm. all the lights and all of the mirrors in the whole car.
Oh, really? Yeah. Show me how to do that. I'm going to program my husband's car.
Okay.
He's going to get home from this trip and be like, wow.
Yeah. No, it's best after dark. You just go into the toy box and you can have it play Carol of the Bells, flashing all of these lights. It's amazing. My daughters love it. It's so funny and so cool. But you think about with Elon, what's the ROI on making a car that farts? Mm-hmm. And I think with him, he's just like, who the hell cares? Mm-hmm. It's funny. Mm-hmm. It's cool, right? So for us, that's how we approach Alpha and how I approach the Aesthetic Center is, like, I just want to build a brand that inspires me, that I think is cool, that I think is funny. Mm-hmm. And I'm not always as concerned with ROI. Like, I remember TikTok, 2019, we were one of the first med spas to really be all in on TikTok in 2018, 2019. And we just have these videos going viral of our facial plastic surgeon cutting an orange in a really interesting way with a scalpel. And the video, I'm sure you've been a part of this. I hadn't at that point in time. The video got 4 million views in 3 days. Just the biggest rush of your life, right? Where it's like every time you refresh the page, it's like 10,000 more views, 40,000 more views, 10,000. So, but people would be like, yeah, but John, what was the ROI on that video?
Yeah, it's very hard to quantify.
Yeah.
I think on TikTok, we have like 250 million likes and 20 million views. And like, I don't know. What does it mean? What does it really mean? Did anybody buy more skincare?
I don't care.
Probably, but it's been fun. It's been a wild ride.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
so,
the learning experience. And then understanding what the consumer wants. And also us understanding, it's like being a gamer. You have to enjoy the game.
Exactly.
To be good at marketing, you have to enjoy and understand what motivates the other person. And, like, you also don't want to be manipulative, because I find that so ugly when marketing tries to manipulate you. But you want to, you know, find the message that motivates the person.
You know, I think that marketing in a way that overpromises just does nobody a favor. You know, just like if you were photoshopping all of your before and afters.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, then people come in, they expect those results, which are fake.
Yes.
That while you deliver some of the best results in the nation, maybe those are unattainable.
Yeah.
Right? And so I just think,
but
being
brutally
honest,
TikTok now has evolved to where the platform itself is very geared to generate revenue. So if
100%.
You get more views, like, you can get more traction on the products that you sell.
Well, that's how I approach every early stage platform. Is people would say, why are you doing this? Why do you care about TikTok?
Yeah.
It's all kids, right? This is 2018, 2019.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, we're investing in TikTok because every platform starts out all kids, and then it turns into kids and their moms and kids and their dads because they want to see what their kids are doing. And
so
then
I
it's everybody.
You're like an early adopter, basically.
You have to be an early adopter because it's in the early stages when the algorithm is the friendliest, right? You think about, how easy was it for every single person that followed you on Facebook in 2007 to see Dr. K just change her favorite books to Pride and Prejudice and The Hobbit?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, now if you change your books on Facebook,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if they still have that, nobody sees it.
Mm-hmm.
You could have a baby and half of your audience won't see it on Facebook.
Yeah.
Right? Because the algorithm is so tight.
Well, also, I think the consumer has so much being thrown at them that their attention is diverted into 500 directions. Like, where do they literally focus? If I get 5 minutes at the end of the day to scroll my Instagram, of course I can't see everybody I follow, but, you know, that's all I got for you, Instagram. Then I got to go play with my dog. Then I got to make dinner.
And
so
your sound is off.
Those 10 minutes, that's it.
You're not listening to it. You're watching it, right?
Your consumer has so many distractions. Even the times I want to buy something, Black Friday, I had so many emails I wanted to click on. No time. No time. So much thrown at me, right?
Yeah.
So that's the new problem that consumers, that we are going to face when we're marketing, is like tension overload.
Yeah, it's definitely true. I still believe, though, that great quality always wins.
Yes.
Like, whoever is producing the best quality and the most of it will win.
I think if you're consistent, for sure. And then also if you're unique, like the Super Bowl commercials that are funny and they really just stand out. Like, they're not afraid to be different.
Well, that's where I like some of the things that you've done, even though they've been you know, maybe getting you in hot water with a certain celebrity or whatnot. It's like, how are you zagging? Because zagging when everybody else is zigging is how you build a large following, you know? And I haven't, like, our Med Spa Aesthetic Center that I started isn't even close to as big of the brand that you've created for yourself, but, you know, 40,000 followers for a brand, you know, that represents 20 different injectors. I'm proud of that. It's hard to build a brand on Instagram because it's just seen in a different light, right? It doesn't feel like an influencer. It feels like these people are trying to sell me something.
Yeah.
So we're proud of that, right?
And you should be. And but if you think about 40,000 people, it's like that fills the Rolls Bowl. That's a lot of people. Because I used to get caught up in these numbers games. And one day I was at a Coldplay concert at the Rose Bowl. I'm like, this is what 60,000 people looks like. This is amazing to have any number of followers. Like, you fill 1,000 people in a lecture hall. That's amazing. And that's all you need to keep your office busy.
Well, I think we get so caught up with the size of the following. And, I mean, it's just, would you rather go deep or would you rather go wide? And I think with social media, you have to be obsessed with going deep.
Mm-hmm.
And we have people in the industry that have 100,000 followers, 200,000 followers, and they'll post something and it'll get 10 likes.
Yeah.
You know, and then somebody else with 5,000 followers gets, you know, 30 comments.
Yeah.
Which one would you rather be?
Yeah.
Definitely the more engagement wins.
Definitely. I think one of the big problems with Instagram right now is, too, that they hold back showing your content to people until you pay to play. And so if you're not buying paid ads, it's just really becoming challenging to grow on Instagram.
Yeah.
So I think people who want to grow and you want to get more followers, in the beginning it was easy, and now you have to literally buy ads to get more followers.
Which was my point with TikTok.
Which they direct your content to those people. It's not like you're buying the followers, but you're getting the visibility to those people.
So if you get in early, right? I know right now the one that everybody's on is Lapse. Right, Becca?
I haven't heard of that one.
So Lapse. What's that?
Which one is that?
Lapse is the, like, it's all the cool kids are on Lapse.
Well,
I'm not a Lapse because I'm not a cool kid. But everybody that I know that is like into the early stages of social media is all about Lapse.
Hmm.
I don't know if you would agree with that.
L-A-P-S.
Yeah.
L-A-P-S-E.
L-A-P-S-E. It's kind of like, it kind of reminds me of Instagram when Instagram first started.
Mm-hmm.
Very photo heavy, but like very beautiful photography.
Mm.
Shareable though. And anyway, if you can find, like, what's the next trend, maybe Lapse is going to hit, maybe it won't.
Yeah.
But is it worth creating, like, staking your, putting your flag in the ground for your username and taking a flyer on it?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
We'll have to check it out. I mean, I made a Threads account. What was that other app we joined where you had to go into conference rooms and talk to people?
Oh.
Remember, we did that for a while.
Yeah, it was.
I can't remember the name of that.
I was
anymore.
So into that during COVID.
I was too, and I
with the black and white logo with the guy's face on it.
And you had to get invited to join it. That's sad that we don't remember the name of it.
Yeah, I mean, Twitter basically cannibalized it with their spaces.
Yeah.
Clubhouse.
Clubhouse.
Yeah.
Yes.
Clubhouse.
It still exists.
Yeah.
I think it's still out there, but I don't know. You couldn't save the content, so it was like you're investing all this energy and it was evaporating.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way I like to think about it is Instagram and TikTok will be replaced, whether it's in 1 year, 5 years, or 10 years, by another social media platform. And all of the old people, the not cool people, will be on TikTok and Instagram. And they'll be replaced by something way cooler and way more awesome.
Lapse, the new thing.
Lapse, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so that's where it's always, in my opinion, good to take a flyer on whatever's next, develop a strategy around it. If it hits... It hit while you're, you know, early, and it's easy. Like, we built our following on TikTok to 50,000 followers in 2019, and we spent 1/500th of the effort to do that versus Instagram, and we still have way more followers on TikTok, and we barely spend the amount of time on there than we do on Instagram, and we still have less followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
That's the power of getting in early.
Yeah, and I think it has this perception of just being more fun.
Yes.
And so I think that's a big plus because it brought a lot of people joy during the pandemic. And even now, like Instagram is, you scroll because you want to see what everybody's up to, but TikTok is for fun.
Yeah, it's true, and it's more authentic, I feel.
Yeah, definitely.
Versus Instagram, which is more manicured and more influencers. And
exactly.
All these things.
Well, this has been such a fascinating conversation. You have so many great ideas, and I can't wait to learn more over dinner. You guys should join us. We're going to dinner.
Yes, we are, at the Royce. It's going to be fun.
Dinner at the Royce tonight. And where can people find you on your social handles and the next big lecture you're giving?
So you can follow me on Instagram, johnwheeler.alpha. You can follow my company, Partner with Alpha. We're also partnerwithalpha.com. And I also post every single weekday on LinkedIn. You can search for John Wheeler, J-O-H-N-W-H-E-E-L-E-R. And I post every day about the medical aesthetics industry specifically.
Amazing. We have so many great insights. Can't wait to learn more. That's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y. And our website is the same, www.beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find our amazing skincare line. And definitely the collagen powder that I want you to try.
I need to. Do you have samples, like a Coffee Mate, like, individual serving?
Little ones. You might have to take it as a carry, a check-in.
Okay.
We'll have to see. That's it. Stay tuned for more on AI, marketing, and all things aesthetic. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.